The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching the weekend preview edition of Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined here on 11-11-11 at 11-11 a.m. Pacific time with my co-host, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, how sometimes in the NFL, who you played overly defines who you are. We're going to discuss the difficulties of going 12 miles across town L.A. at rush hour, and in Teddy's first appearance as our weatherman, is the biggest story hurricane warnings in Tallahassee.
First edition of the weather, at least you didn't call me a weather girl, I appreciate that, but packed show on a Friday, Dave, ton of stuff to get to, obviously a double dose of money time for the Friday edition, we have college and NFL edition, but before we get deep inside the minutia of sports handicapping, what's your first take on what you saw last night?
Just some memories that come back to mind. We've got a basketball game this evening on an aircraft carrier, so you have to start thinking about Al McGuire. And for a lot of the younger viewers out there, well, you came along at a time where he's not going to be terribly relevant to you. Fantastic basketball coach at Marquette. Wonderful, wonderful announcer with NBC afterwards. Arguably as good of a color man as there ever was. But beyond that, just an interesting human being. If we had to pick our favorite person in sports in our lifetime, absolutely Al McGuire. We miss him tonight when we think about aircraft carrier because that was his phrase for the big dominant player inside. We'll give you one of our most famous McGuire quips of all, and he had a book full of them. They asked him back in the 70s when he advised one of his players to go to the NBA, back at the time when most coaches would say, you know what, you should stay in college, don't go pro. He said, Al, why did you tell this guy to opt for the NBA? He said, you know what I did? I looked in my refrigerator, and I went to his room, and I looked at his refrigerator. It was time for him to go make some money. We miss Al McGuire an awful lot, and we'll think about him when North Carolina and Michigan State tip off in San Diego early this evening. Teddy, what do you bring with you from Thursday?
Well, you know, it's been a year where if you talk to any sportsbook director here in Las Vegas, and Dave, both you and I talk to sportsbook directors on a regular basis, at some point we're going to have them here on Vegas Sports Day doing little bits for us for sure, but the bottom line, you talk to any sportsbook director in town, they'll tell you what a miserable this season has been, what a miserable season this has been for the sportsbooks within the state of Nevada and here in Las Vegas. And last night, just one more example of why the books are getting their clocks cleaned when it comes to college football this year. We know about the dominance of the top 10 teams in the country against the spread. Point spread monsters. But last night, you know, your average Thursday night, what's going to happen? The public bettor is going to come in. He's going to bet the favorite in the over. What happened last night? We had three road favorites. Oh, all of them covered. We had three games with relatively high totals. All of them flew over the total. So you had a triple witching hour, favorites and overs in all three games last night. Another rough night for the sportsbooks here in the state of Nevada. Speaking of sportsbooks, and speaking of bad segues, let's go right into Market Watch right here, right now. Of course, today's show loaded with football. We're going to talk college hoops right here. And, of course, the marquee game that everyone is talking about, North Carolina and Michigan State, played off the coast of San Diego on what, the USS Carl Vinson? It's got to be a pretty big ship. Outdoors at night, wind, rain. What's going to happen when the Spartans and Tar Heels collide on national TV tonight?
We kind of wish we knew exactly what the conditions were going to be or had some feedback from players having warmed up on that court. I'm not sure this is a typical Tom Izzo type of matchup. Through the years, we've made an awful lot of money taking Izzo in an underdog role. His teams compete hard. They play fundamentally sound. They rarely get out-rebounded. But I don't think Michigan State's anywhere near ready for this level of challenge yet. They're going to be a good team later, maybe much later. We might not see Michigan State play their best basketball into February. So there's not a lot of urgency for him to play well or win tonight. He's got a brutal schedule coming up through the next couple weeks. A lot of big games ahead. I don't think Izzo brings that urgency. I don't think the margin matters to him as much tonight as getting a good workout in for a lot of new players in the rotation. But boy, does North Carolina look good. All starters back from a team that was pretty solid at the end of the season last year. A team that was just a step away from getting to the Final Four. But note that it was a team that didn't have a whole lot of depth, which Roy Williams likes. He wants to push tempo. He wants to run. He's got that depth now. Not only everyone back from last year, but a couple of freshmen you're really going to enjoy watching. P.J. Hairston and, of course, James Michael McAdoo. Yes, a relation, a little more distant from Bob McAdoo. Carolina's going to be fun to watch. If we knew that this was a normal court, could it be one of the rare times we would lay points to Tom Izzo?
It could be if it was a normal court. But, of course, the fact that the game is being played outdoors on an aircraft carrier certainly has to be considered into the handicap. And it's interesting we talk totals-wise. This total, obviously, on the low side for North Carolina games. I don't know if we're going to see a Tar Heel game totaled in this 135, 136 range that we're seeing the game in now, again this year. But they're playing against Sparty Spartans, who obviously are not going to look to push the pace in this ballgame. And given the potential for weather, and again, they're talking about wind being blocked by the fact that the stands are going to be very high up on the sides. That's a real, we don't know. The bottom line is there's a lot of uncertainty that we don't know. When we talk about Michigan State, however, and this needs to be brought up here, because obviously people remember what happened in 2009 when these two teams met for the national title. In Detroit, where Michigan State enjoyed a fair bit of crowd support, and the Tar Heels dominated that ballgame. It was over literally before the eight-minute timeout of the first half. I mean, it was a one-sided game right from the get-go. Different players now, but we're still talking about the two programs being not that dissimilar to where they were. And Michigan State, maybe even a notch or two down. This is a team that lost 15 games last year, 19-15 for the season. They were a point spread disaster area in 2010-2011. And in the offseason, you know, starting backcourt's gone. The guy who you were expecting to be the senior point guard that kicked off the team last year. You got guys transferring out of town. You have guys suffering knee injuries that are keeping them out of play. Michigan State may be, there may be a reputation versus reality here. Spartans might not be that good. You're saying they might be good in February or, you know, in a month or two. I don't know if Michigan State's very good right now, and that's why we've seen the early money coming on North Carolina. This line opened 9.5, 10. Now we're looking at 10.5s and 11s in most locations. Tar Heels are taking money.
We're going to probably have a little bit of Carolina in our pockets before the day's out, because one thing we do believe, a lot of easy transition baskets because of their chemistry edge. But you talk about that total being lower. The one thing we did see bookmakers talk about, when we get to the end of the season in these NCAA tournament games, in these big cavernous arenas, the idea of sight lines absolutely comes into play. Difficult for the shooters when there's not a consistent background. Sight lines absolutely played a part in the setting of that line for tonight.
Yeah, and if the game is going to stay under the total, you better hope at least one of these two teams has a brick fest this evening with sight lines being part of that equation.
Breakfast in the evening. Don't you have that in the morning?
Yeah.
You like that?
You think my segues are bad. That's that pun, bottom 10 all time?
Yeah, I owed you that from yesterday. Raven.
Push-ups after the show. And speaking of push-ups, no push-ups for you because you've been giving us great emails. We're going to answer them again in our next segment in just a moment. Please keep those emails coming in. Thank you for contributing to the show. And, of course, the email address, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter, getting new sign-ups every day. And, of course, we're tweeting out all kinds of info on the show, at Vegas Sports Day. Again, the Twitter link, at Vegas Sports Day. One word. And, of course, get involved in the community. Covers.com, posting forums, active threads going right now discussing this very show. Covers.com in the forums. When we come back, it's Friday. That means no postmortem. I got to think on my feet. We're going to go inside the numbers and answer those viewer emails. This is Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Before we go inside the numbers, it's time to answer some of those viewer emails and questions. We've got a great one to start today's show from the posting forum. D. Santos in the Covers posting forum asks, are the bookies just being lazy or are they too afraid of the early college hoop season? Publishing the line so late in a day with so many games gives me no time to go through the card properly. It's frustrating because I'm a college student and between classes. I don't get enough time to do the analysis I would like. It would be easier if I already had the lines the night before. D, you got an answer for him, D?
We got an answer for him. They are going to delay early in the year because they just don't know what these lines are supposed to be. This first weekend of college basketball might be the most difficult lines they have to set all year. Not only do you have a lot of teams that aren't on the board a lot, so you don't have comparisons from last year that you can use, you've got a lot of player suspensions that the odds makers sometimes don't even know about till the teams get out to the court that day. There are so many mitigating factors that not only are they going to be late, they're going to be careful, you're going to see lower limits. All we can say is the first weekend is difficult, but no, when we get to Monday and there are some very good matchups on the board, look for that to change a little bit. Look for the books to be much more aggressive. It's just this first weekend is a real headache for them because they've also got the football going on at the same time. Let's go to our second letter today. This one is coming from John in Columbus. John starts out, and this is with an exclamation point. Love the show, guys, exclamation point.
Woo!
Okay, after that, I think it goes to a period. With college hoops underway, what are some strategies or situations you look for when handicapping games? Also, are there any specific stats you put a little more emphasis on?
It goes to a period. Are you saying I'm on my period right now? First, you're trying to call me a weather girl, and then you're going to say I'm, you know... we're not going to go there, obviously.
You already went there.
I know, but it was a really bad transition.
Hard getting out from underneath, isn't it? Getting back out.
Apparently it happens on a daily basis. John in Columbus, great question. Here's what I got for you. When it comes to things that we look for early in the season, number one, I like teams that went on a foreign trip this past offseason. I had a positive momentum from that foreign trip. Teams that went to Canada, teams that went to Europe. You see... most programs once every 4 years get the opportunity for those 10 extra practices and as many as 5 or 6 games for that foreign trip. And those teams tend to come into the season with a little bit more chemistry, a little bit more gel together factor, and definitely something that I look for over the, you know, it's not something I'm worried about in December and January, but in November, it's absolutely a part of my college basketball handicap. You're looking to support those type of teams. And when we talk about a little bit later, as the tournaments start and as teams start to travel around and play, you know, 2 or 3 games in a 2 or 3 day span, particularly, say, over Thanksgiving, you're going to find some great situations as teams come back from these tournaments and play, have a stop along the way where they got to play in Boise or they got to play, somewhere in out-of-the-way places. And you'll oftentimes see teams coming off a strong tournament performance have a little bit of a letdown before they return home if they have to play one of those games. You asked about some of the stats that we look for. I mean, 2 stats that I look for all year round. Assist to turnover ratio on offense and defense. It gives you an idea of how good the guard play is, how good the ball movement is, how good are they playing defensively. Are they creating turnovers or are they getting easy buckets on the other end of the court? So both offensive and defensive assist to turnover ratio, you can find that on the Covers.com matchup pages. And you can also take a look at rebounding margin. That's one that I look at all year long. Gives you an idea of how good the front court's playing, how dominant they are, what the size advantage they have or lack thereof. Can they get stuff on the offensive glass? Again, stuff you can find right there in the matchup pages on Covers. I use those matchup pages every day for College Hoop, and I encourage you to use them as well. They're a really good resource. And Dave, I know there's something you wanted to add to this story.
So a couple more that are specific to early season. Because we want to talk about things that aren't in the line. Most stats at some point work their way into the line. Here's things that don't. Early in the season, look for these Friday night home teams when the team also has a home football game the next day. you get better crowds. You get these clusters where, almost like a homecoming weekend, if the alumni can go back and see a basketball game on Friday night and a football game on a Saturday, more people are going to show up. Several of those on the board tonight. Nevada has got that happening. Mississippi's got that happening. That's an extra edge. But also have your altitude chart out there. Not a huge factor the regular season, where teams know when they go to a Colorado State, when they go to a Wyoming, that it's going to be an issue. But when you get a non-conference setting, when a team is not accustomed to going to this site and they're not prepared to deal with the altitude, sometimes these teams get a little winded, especially in the second half. Those are key early season angles that are not factored into the betting lines.
Speaking of getting winded, Dave, I'm not winded yet. We're not even halfway through the show. And yet, it's already time to go inside the numbers. What do you got for us today with your Cracker Jack group of research assistants?
We're going to have to get a Cracker Jack segue group. Boy, this has been this has been a bad week for that. When we set up our play of the day in the NFL later, it leads us to something that we do regularly, but we don't see enough of you also doing, and that's analyzing NFL schedules during the season. We know why a lot of people don't do it. Most years, the NFL schedule balances itself out pretty well, that when you get towards the end, the difficulty of opposition isn't that wide. But now everyone's at least at the midway point. And in the first cycle, you can see this getting skewed a little bit. So let's talk about difficulty of opposition a little bit, show you some teams you might need to look at as being either underrated or overrated because of the schedule draw. So when we go inside the numbers on this Friday, let's start out with the teams that have played the five toughest schedules. Now, it's based on a multitude of factors, both one loss record of the opponents and some power rating adjustments. Tampa Bay has played the toughest schedule in the NFL, followed by Chicago, Jacksonville, Seattle, and St. Louis. Note that all five of those teams might have played a little better than the numbers would show. The difficulty's been there. Now, let's go to the bottom of those charts. The New York Giants, the easiest schedule to date, followed by Houston at 31, Arizona, Pittsburgh, and Tennessee. Might want to be a little careful with those teams. And a particular note this week, number one Tampa versus number 31 Houston. When you do your stat work on that game, you absolutely must incorporate the fact that the schedules they've played have been dynamically different.
Yeah, sure have, Dave. And speaking of dynamically different, we're going to segue out of this segment when we come back.
Wow.
The news you need to know in our Insider Six Pack.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream, be there.
All right, guys, it's time to pop that top on the Insider Six Pack and give you six chunks of knowledge for the upcoming football and basketball schedule, because obviously hoops in play now. We got to give those factoids here in the Insider Six Pack. And of course, we're going to start where I'm supposed to dress as a weatherman. And what's going on here? I'm not dressed as a weatherman, and I'm darn well not singing It's Raining Men. Yeah, Malinsky this morning, I kid you not. Friday mornings, we're busy, man. We got write-ups to put up. We obviously have a college basketball on center stage and getting the first crack at these lines. And Malinsky sending me a YouTube video of It's Raining Men. Hallelujah, like I'm supposed to sing that.
You know, you do that so well that it's not the first time. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Apparently I did just sing that on air.
And you sang that well.
Let's get the weather channel up, or the graphic. Yes, that's what we're looking for here. Because obviously on Fridays, first thing we got to do is talk about the weather situations for the upcoming weekend. Looks like we're going to have some gusty winds across the Midwest. 10 to 20 mile per hour forecast in Big Ten country, something to be aware of. We're looking at winds as high as 25 miles an hour for Baylor, Kansas in the Big 12. That's a game with a high total, be aware. And a lot of wind also down the road just a bit with another high total, Texas A&M facing Kansas State. We also want to look for cold temperatures, wind, and a chance of rain. That includes San Jose State, Utah State, TCU, Boise, Idaho, BYU, UCLA, and Utah, all of which we're looking at cold weather conditions and potential for precipitation. And because of that late kickoff time, we have to talk about Arizona State, Washington State. We could see snow flurries, wind chill falling to the 20s. That could be perhaps an issue for some of the guys coming from the warm practice fields of Tempe, Arizona.
When Teddy does the weather girls that well, it's a little troubling, isn't it?
You know, that well?
We're going to be real careful about how we script this stuff out in the future. Fresno State's had a disappointing season. It's now down to the point where they have to sweep out to get a bowl. Possibly some difficulties this week, we thought, and now we're not sure. Three players suspended, linebacker Kyle Knox, center Richard Helapico, and left guard Matt Hunt. So we're ready to downgrade Fresno, thinking, okay, you're having a tough year, you've got suspensions, it may get worse. And then we found this from starting right guard Austin Wentworth. He says, you know, both Trevor Richter and Cody Wichman, they have starts under their belts. They're great players, so they'll pick up the slack. They'll play great. I'm not worried about the offensive line at all. So now we go back and wonder, why is he so optimistic? Well, the two linemen suspended this week have each missed three games earlier this year. In those three games, Fresno averaged 513 yards of total offense. Those suspensions may look worse than they actually are.
Things that don't look worse than they actually are include NCAA sanctions. And we've got some of them to talk about here because there are five teams that enter the college basketball season already ineligible for postseason play. We've got Chicago State, Grambling, and Southern U, three teams that you're not likely to see on the betting board very often this season. We have a couple teams that you will, however. These ineligibilities have to do with the NCAA's APR requirements, meaning their kids aren't passing classes. They're not going to class very often. So Chicago State, Grambling, Southern U, which you won't see on the betting boards often. The teams you will see, two of them are playing in tonight's contest. We have Cal State Northridge, who opens at Southern Cal this evening. They're 16-point underdogs in that ballgame. We also have UL Monroe. Louisiana Monroe opens at Mississippi. They're catching 22.5 this evening. It's worth noting that because of the fact that these teams won't be playing in the postseason no matter what they do, some of these early non-conference games can be real step-up type of ball games for these squads. They have increased importance because they're only going to have a few chances to make a name for themselves this year. Games that Northridge and UL Monroe play tonight give them that rare opportunity.
Sometimes you just got to love the Freudian stuff, that a guy who does the weather girls a little bit too well has to say Cal Straight instead of Cal State. You just love those little Freudian aspects that play along in life. One team that will be eligible for the postseason and will be there, Vanderbilt, our consensus top 10 team to start this season, not going to start at full strength. Starting center, Festus Ezeli, terrific shot blocker, 2.6 blocks per game last year. Good chance he would have been the nation's leading shot blocker this season. He's got a torn MCL. We may not see him until the beginning of SEC play in January.
Festus, that's a game that we can all, a name that we can all enjoy. Speaking of Freudian slip, a game, a name. Come on, let's talk about Loyola, Marymount, and USC, and UCLA this evening. Yeah, live television, we do it every day. Over under mistakes, 16.5 for today's show. But Loyola versus UCLA today, it's worth noting, big worth noting, UCLA is going to be playing their home games in the LA Sports Arena this season. That's about 12 miles across the city from where they normally play at Pauley Pavilion, and that's 12 heavily trafficked miles. We'll have to see how UCLA's attendance figures are affected. Of course, missing from the opener tonight, Jeremy Anderson. He's suspended for the first two games following an off-court misdemeanor plea involving the theft of a laptop. So they're going to be missing a key body and playing in an unfamiliar venue. Of course, a problem with the Loyola side in this ballgame. Well, they're missing a pretty important cog. Two-time All-West Coast Conference performer Drew Viney not going to play until some point after Thanksgiving. He's undergone successful foot surgery, but still recovering from that surgery.
Time to clear up a little bit of confusion before we go into the weekend. A little bit of attention given to the fact that Sam Bradford only took half of the snaps in practice for the Rams yesterday, with A.J. Feely taking the other half with the first-team offense. Coach C. Spagnuolo says, no problem there at all. Quoting from him directly, we try not to give them all to him because the more you put on him, then you're going backwards a little bit. He's progressing pretty good. He's a tough guy. So just a precaution yesterday. He will be the starter on Sunday. The one clarification we don't have yet, though, Mark Clayton has been activated by the Rams this week. Clayton hasn't played since week 5 of last year before he went down with a knee injury. But he's not on the 46-man roster yet. We're not sure if he will do that by Sunday. They want to see how good he looks in practice on Friday. Going back to Spagnuolo again, we're still talking about a guy who didn't go through training camp, hadn't been in the game in a long time, so we'll have to slowly ease him in. That receiving core getting to health, but not quite at full health just yet.
When we come back, it's money time.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, it's college football money time! And let's start in Boise, Idaho. We've got a showdown of showdowns. Boise State trying to go undefeated. This is their last real test in the regular season. Right now, the Broncos minus 15 at home against TCU on the blue turf, the over-under, 58.
We're not accustomed to seeing a Gary Patterson team taking this many points. If we negate the Boise need side of the equation, can we take it with TCU? Because we don't see this with Patterson much. The problem is, this is not the same Patterson team. They lost some key cogs from that defense last year. And worse, at the Alabamas of the world, you don't rebuild, you reload. We may have finally found that TCU isn't quite to that level yet. They did not just reload this year. Right now, number 38 in the nation in total defense. Number 70 in the nation in pass efficiency defense. Those are not TCU numbers, but keep in mind, that's come despite the fact that they faced a pretty weak schedule. The most alarming number of all, and we think this could come into factor tomorrow because Boise State brings a good defense into play, TCU is number 112 in the nation in net punting against a Boise team that makes some stops. You might be punting your way into some bad field position.
Yeah, but the whole TCU side of the equation, to me, it's kind of a question mark. Because, I mean, this is a Horned Frogs team that was good enough last week. They were minus 5 in turnovers. 3 times they turned the ball over in the Wyoming red zone, and they still won the game by a double-digit margin. Didn't cover the number, but the fact that you win the game by double digits when you're minus 5 in turnovers says that you're doing something right. That being said, we look at this TCU schedule, and who have they played? I mean, nobody, really. Certainly nobody of Boise's caliber. The 4 toughest games so far this season, well, they played Baylor in the opener. They lost that game. They played SMU. Oh, they lost that game. Air Force, they were able to win. San Diego State, they were able to win. None of those teams would be anything less than double-digit dogs against Boise on a neutral field. And, of course, this game being played on the blue turf, which is maybe the strongest home field, certainly one of the 2 or 3 strongest home fields in all of college football.
Let's go to State College, Pennsylvania, which used to be an exciting thing for me to do. It's my alma mater. Little different week this week. Nebraska right now, a 3-point favorite, total 43 over a Penn State team that's awfully difficult to peg. We've had a lot of people questioning this week. Okay, you went there. You follow this program as close as anyone. What do you think is going to happen? I have no clue. This is one of these games that has such a wide variance of possibilities. You hear the player saying the right thing. We want to go and win this one for Joe. But does that carry into the game very well? If you give up a touchdown on the first drive, or the first time anything bad happens in the game, you begin sulking a little bit and lose some of that energy. And do you have a passionate Penn State crowd? Or is this sort of a different, almost eerie type of atmosphere? Usually a big pep rally every Friday before a home game. Not today. That's been canceled. So I don't know what the crowd setting is like. I don't know what the team's attitude is like. What we do know is they're capable of beating Nebraska. This Nebraska offense, which had great rushing stats in recent years in the Big 12, because you don't have physical defenses, has not run the football well in the Big 10 this year. Penn State's capable of winning the game. I just have no idea what level of intensity they get and how good their game preparations have been during the week.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about how Boise State for me is a one-way game. I'm either playing Boise or pass. On that field with that team in this situation, it's a one-way game. I either lay in or I'm not playing. It's that simple. Penn State's a similar story for me. I don't want Nebraska. Nebraska's no good. Nebraska hasn't been good all year. When you lose at home to Northwestern in November, you're not a good football team. You know, the offense has one guy. It's Taylor Martinez. Taylor Martinez makes a lot of mistakes. Taylor Martinez does not throw well downfield. Taylor Martinez is clearly not someone who's a beloved figure in his own locker room. Defensively, Nebraska's had holes all year long. They've had holes. I mean, Penn State, dominant defensively compared to Nebraska. When you look at the defensive numbers here, it's almost going to, you know, you're like, wow, which team's favored in this ball game exactly? The Nittany Lions don't have the sexy offensive stats, but Nebraska has struggles on both sides of football. They played one true road game so far, one tough road game at Wisconsin. We know what happened in that ball. I mean, they weren't even in it. They were blown off the field. So maybe Penn State, maybe it shows up, maybe they don't. I know this much. I don't want to lay points more than a field goal. Asking Nebraska to win on the road against this defense by more than a field goal, I'm simply not going to do it.
Let's go to Palo Alto. The biggest game of the year in the Pac-10. They're saying possibly the biggest home game ever for the Stanford program. Stanford now 3.5, a total of 68 over Oregon. An oddity at the start, though. When we talk about big games and A-level teams, you think about these great, passionate crowds. This is Palo Alto. This has been purely a wine and cheese crowd for a long time. So we wonder, is there going to be an extra level of intensity? Will they finally step it up? Or are they just deciding, oh, this is a big game. We're going to go from a Chardonnay to a Cabernet for this one. maybe go to a nice Stilton to pair up to it. Yes, get those Cars water crackers, instead of the saltines. Does the crowd impact the game in a way that's going to help Stanford? That's going to be one of the first things we look at, not just for this game, but in viewing Stanford going forward.
Yeah, but I mean, viewing Stanford going forward, we got to view Stanford going backward and explain why this point spread is where it is. The look-ahead lines over the summer had Oregon favored 3.5 in this ballgame on the road in Palo Alto. Now, obviously, Stanford favored in that same point spread range, 3.5. Over the same Ducks team. We haven't seen personnel changes for these two teams since the summer. Nothing significant. Stanford's got some fairly significant injuries at receiver. We talked about that earlier this week in the Insider Six-Pack segment. But by and large, we're talking about the same basic teams power rating-wise. Why has the point spread moved to touchdown since August? Simple. Because Stanford continues to cover point spreads. No team in the country is perfect. ATS except for Stanford, 9-0 against the number. And depending on how you grade that game against USC, where they really cover the closing number of 7.5 in triple overtime, I know that in our readings, we don't tend to grade those overtime games as a win, but when you look at any stat site and when you talk to the sports books and who they paid out in that game, yeah, they paid out Stanford backers. So when a team goes 9-0 ATS, they are forced to make adjustments in the sports book, and that's why Stanford's laying 3 here instead of catching 3 like they were back in August.
The fact that we want to bring into play two elements here, speed and depth. We saw them both last year head-to-head. Stanford leads 21-3 early in the game at Eugene, seemingly in control, and then it was a wipeout. Final 52-31, Oregon, a 49-10 run. The speed was dominant. Now, that was early in the season. Speed is an issue again this year, but I'm wondering about depth as well. Here's something you need to be factoring in with teams like Oregon that play at a blistering pace. They end up being better conditioned than other teams. Oregon played its best defensive game of the season last week against Washington. You go back and look at the end of last year, Oregon was playing awfully good defense. Part of that is they just get so well conditioned because of the tempo of their practices. Think about it this way. Is there a better way to develop a defense than put them up against that Oregon offense with their weapons and with their tempo in practice every day? Last year, it was speed and depth that gave Oregon command in the second half. Little slower playing surface this year. They want the grass to be as high as possible in Palo Alto. Of course, in the Bay Area, when Cal plays Stanford, they want the grass to be as good as possible. But that's a separate thing. Oregon has that speed and depth edge again. Makes us think that maybe this line, despite all those Stanford point spread successes, really is too high.
Yeah, and of course, the last two meetings between these two teams, 83 and 93 total points scored. We'll see how the high grass affects the point total in this one, Dave. And now let's go to Tallahassee, where the Florida State Seminoles, -9, total of 50 against the Miami Hurricanes. We talked about this game in our postmortem yesterday. Talked about how it has been nothing but road dogs cashing tickets in this series. Very little home field edge. And again, the road dogs won the game outright each of the last 5 years. In the last 10 years, the road team has covered in this series by 105.5 points. That's 10.5 points per game on average over a 10-year sample size. That's fairly significant, Dave, isn't it?
It is if we can add another element in play. What we're looking for in a road underdog. One of the things you want is you want poise. You don't want to make mistakes. You don't want to commit penalties. You don't want to do things to give the game away. So you want to allow your talent to unfold on the field. What did Al Golden say he wanted to do as priority one with Miami? Discipline. Let's cut down turnovers. Let's cut down penalties. Well, now we're seeing it unfold. The last five conference games for the Hurricanes, only 3 turnovers. Last year, they were number 113 in the nation in penalties. That's now down to number 20. Okay, so now let's start to add this equation up. You've got a team that's got as much talent as their opponent. They're getting a lot of points, and they're playing smart and with discipline. So, Teddy, what do? When we get a lot of points with an underdog that brings that?
We talk about the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. And, of course, the Vegas Sports Day play of the day for college football on Saturday is going to be the Miami Hurricanes. The U going to come to play in Tallahassee. We'll take Miami +9. That's a Sports Day play of the day for Saturday. When we come back, of course, we'll be talking about Money Time NFL edition, and we'll have another Sports Day play of the day for Sunday after this brief commercial message.
This is David Ivey for Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Money Time NFL Edition brought to you by Covers.com for all of your sports betting information. Covers covers the numbers. All right, enough with the sponsor. Not enough with the sponsor. It's Money Time, guys. Money Time NFL style. And that means we got to start off in Pittsburgh. In Pittsburgh, let's go to Cincinnati, where Pittsburgh's -3, total 41.5. And this is a game that has all kinds of reputation versus reality questions surrounding it. We have a Bengals team that hasn't really stepped up in class. We have a Steelers team that has dominated this series. 9-1 ATS the last 10 times on this field. And yet, Cincinnati right now, looking down at Pittsburgh in the standings. Have what we've seen from the Bengals been real so far this year? Or is Cincy about to get a big can of comeuppance as they face their perpetual nemesis, the Pittsburgh Steelers?
That's the question of the week for this particular game. Well, we did the degree of difficulty charts back in Inside the Numbers. Cincinnati just fell off of that chart in terms of playing the weakest schedule. If the season ended this week, the Bengals would have had one game against the playoff team. That was kind of that ugly grinder of a loss they had against the 49ers. So they've done a lot of things right. They played smarter football than we've seen in the past. Andy Dalton has given them some surprising early leadership. But it's also been against some weak opponents. And it's one thing to grind out against weak opponents. Well, literally, that's what you're doing. You're grinding out. You're setting up your opponents to beat themselves. You can't do that against Pittsburgh. Now, you have to go win the game. You can't beat Pittsburgh by sitting back and waiting for the Steelers to beat themselves. Can the Bengals do it? There is that question of ability that hasn't been answered yet. But what we continue to see from the Steelers and that bagged up defense, and you know, a couple of weeks ago in an Insider Six-Pack, we did a quote from Kevin Cobb, the Arizona quarterback, talking about how they could run the ball on the Steelers late in the game. They were surprised they could do it because he saw the Steelers getting tired. You go back to Sunday night against Baltimore when the Ravens went literally the length of the field to score in the final minute to win that game. That Steeler defense looked a little bit tired again. Could that be the key factor on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, certainly when we talk about this Bengals team, what's the strength of the team? The strength of the team is the passing game. And where's Pittsburgh been vulnerable, particularly vulnerable? Well, they've been giving up big pass plays, as Torrey Smith can tell you with that game-winning TD for Baltimore on Sunday night. What do the Steelers do well? There's only one thing that Pittsburgh does well. They throw the ball downfield. Ben Roethlisberger continues to be a monster, and boy, that team is loaded with playmakers when it comes to their receiving core. What's Cincinnati's defensive strength? Well, they're pretty darn good in the secondary, have been all year. So it looks like Cincy's strengths could match up fairly well with Pittsburgh weaknesses. But again, that series history dominated by Pittsburgh. It's a classic conundrum, current form versus past history.
Let's go to Atlanta, where we've got a classic matchup out of the NFC. New Orleans facing the Falcons, game sitting at Pick'em with a total of 50. What you want to do a lot in the NFL is measure the energy levels and preparation levels of teams. Because, you know, you see these ebbs and flows all the time. Think, why were they so good this week? Why were they so bad last week? Boy, does Atlanta look like they've set up well here. Their last 2 weeks, a bye and an easy walkover win against the Colts that they controlled wire to wire. That means you're physically very fresh. You have not been distracted. And you have to believe, over the course of those last 2 weeks, there was some game plan time. For their chief rival, Atlanta should give you the best game they can give you this week, especially now that Julio Jones is showing why they were so eager to trade up to draft him.
Yeah, I mean, Julio Jones was an absolute difference maker last week. And again, that was against Indy. Indy's as bad as it gets at the NFL level this year, so you don't want to take too much out of that performance. But the bottom line is, when they signed Julio Jones, they drafted Julio Jones and traded everything to get Julio Jones, they thought he was going to be an impact player that would open everything else up for the offense, including the running game. And the running game here may be the best way to exploit this Saints defense, because New Orleans has been solid against the pass. They have playmakers in the secondary. They get a decent pass rush. But you look at the Saints' weakness against the run, and we're talking about, what, 5.3 yards per carry. Those aren't good numbers by any stretch of the imagination. Michael Turner now has the advantage of forcing a defense to be worried about a deep threat, keeping the safeties back. Turner could have even more of an edge in this ballgame, which also means, you know, we talked about this last week. In fact, we used the Saints as the play of the day last week, the Saints under the total. And that may come into play this week as well with this another NFC South matchup.
Note that when we did that, it was talking about that Saint record playing under the total in division games. This is one. It shows that Sean Payton plays these games a little bit differently than sometimes people project. Let's go Sunday night in the Meadowlands, where the Jets are now 1.5 and 47.5 over the Patriots. And once again, it's reputation versus reality time. 2 weeks in a row, you could have made excellent historical cases for New England. 2 weeks back, they were playing Pittsburgh. Tom Brady had those great numbers against the Steelers. Been kind of a dominance for Belichick in that series. But the New England defense gave up so much to the Pittsburgh defense, the history didn't matter. Last Sunday, Bill Belichick off of a loss, one of the best long-term angles in the NFL. But again, the New England defense was giving up too much to the Giant defense, so that didn't matter. So what do we have going forward here? Yeah, again, it's the Patriots off of a loss. They don't lose three in a row very often. But what are you giving up? A lot on defense again. For the third consecutive week, the Patriot defense more than a yard per play worse than their opponent. So in this case, do the current realities outweigh some of those past performance profiles?
We've seen weakness from New England on both sides of the football during this current two-game skid. And again, you talk about how long it's been since the Pats have lost three in a row. How does 2002 sound? It's been nearly a decade since Belichick and Brady have lost three consecutive regular season ballgames. They're dogs here, and the betting markets say, yeah, that's a realistic possibility. The weakness on the defensive side, Dave, you just talked about it. And again, that 1.2 yards per play differential defensively, the Jets that much better than New England so far this season. But the other weakness we've seen from the Pats has been on the offensive side of the football. We've seen the offensive line get pushed around. We've seen the receivers really struggling against press coverage in recent weeks. The Pats don't have a Randy Moss. They don't have the big downfield threat. They don't have a lot of size other than the tight ends in the receiving corps. They don't have a lot of strength. There are issues with New England's receivers. They were shut out for a full half last week. That hasn't happened. They hadn't been shut out at the half, I believe, in 74 consecutive games. Pats have some issues moving forward, and issues that aren't necessarily going to go away with a matchup against a physical defense and a team that has confidence because they beat him in the playoffs in Foxborough last year, even though they lost the rematch earlier this season.
add another element to the Jets. So you can kind of tell that we like them a little bit. There's something better than the Jets on this week's board. Similar to what we talked about with Atlanta, in terms of preparation for a big game, last 2 weeks for the Jets, a bye and a win against Buffalo. You're pretty fresh coming out of that cycle. Last 2 weeks for the Patriots, Steelers and Giants, two physical opponents. We're going to have some Jets in our pocket come kickoff on Sunday night.
Let's go to Indianapolis, where the Jacksonville Jaguars, are road favorites. Yes, they are. -3, over under 37.5. And certainly this line's, you know, just looking at this line tells you all you need to know about Indy, a team that is absolutely designed. There is a structural flaw with the Colts that says they're going to lose the turnover battle on a week-in, week-out basis. It's a defense that plays that cover two zone. They read and react. They're not aggressive. They're not forcing turnovers. They're not getting the pass rush from Freeney and Mathis on a regular basis this year. Defense 1-1 turnover created in their last six ball games. And you have an offense that's playing from behind with a young quarterback, forced to throw downfield. The Indy offense, many more than one turnover over the course of the last 6 weeks. So it's a game where the Colts are supposed to lose a turnover battle again. Isn't it, Dave?
When we talked about the inside the numbers element here, for Jacksonville, it's been particularly intriguing. Despite the fact that they played such a difficult schedule, their defensive numbers across the board puts them in that top tier in the NFL this year. And it's been a brutal schedule in so many different ways. Look at Blaine Gabbert, a rookie quarterback, having to develop and learn his way in the NFL. Take some of the defenses that he's gone up against. The Jets, the Steelers, the Ravens, arguably the three best defensive units in the NFL. And you've had teams like New Orleans and others that they played outside of that cycle. They faced a lot of playoff teams. So Jacksonville has played some good football. They haven't been able to get it to show on the scoreboard. But now you've got a young quarterback who wants to work and he wants to develop. You've got a coach who's literally fighting for his job. So whereas a lot of teams might take the Colts lightly, think, okay, they're not that big a deal. We'll coast past them. Let's get ready for next week. This is the game for Jacksonville. They're coming off of a bye. This might be as seriously as anyone is going to game plan for the Colts the rest of the way. So you're going to probably see some of the best Jacksonville has to bring. And again, look at this defense. Considering who they've played, it's been a pretty solid unit.
Yeah, and a full yard per play better, by the way, than the Colts defense, even with the issues that Indy's had in terms of creating turnovers. They're also getting gashed in so many other ways. But there's one more key factor here for the Indianapolis Colts we have to talk about, and that's the fact that of all the teams in the NFL not to play 10 straight weeks without a bye, you know, here's Indy. They haven't had their bye yet. And normally we think of late season byes as a positive thing for a playoff contending team. When you've lost every game so far this season, when you're looking straight ahead at, hey, guess what? We got a couple of days off. We get 5 days off as mandated by the new NFL labor contract. Boy, that has to look as a, you know, beautiful vacation for the Colts players in this one. So it's an Indy team that's been outscored 120-24 in the last three games. They've trailed by double digits before halftime in every one of those contests. And now it's a situation where, yeah, they get a bye after this ball game, not before, which I believe, Dave, could be setting us up for a drum roll, perhaps. Are you going to give the play of the day on this one?
Why don't you go ahead and handle it, and you could do it as one of the weather girls. It's raining Jags, perhaps.
I will do no such thing. But yes, the play of the day for the weekend in NFL action. We're looking at Vegas Sports Day's play of the day. Jacksonville, -3, going to fade these Colts one more time again. The Jaguars, minus the spot at Indy. That's the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. That's going to wrap it up for 11-11-11. Thank you so much for spending time out of your luckiest day of the year. Just that luckiest day of the millennium, really, to spend with us. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend. May all your bets be winners. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. We'll see you again on Monday.